When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Steve Burns is the founder of New Trader U. He has produced many different trading courses and with his wife Holly has written over 20 books about trading. He is one of the most frequent faces on financial Twitter. He tweets about markets, financial freedom, and great motivational materials for traders. He's also very active on Instagram and Facebook and has a following of nearly a million people across all his platforms. I'm just honored to call him a Twitter friend. Steve Burns, thank you so much for spending your time with me today. It is so great to speak with you.
Oh, great that you're having me, Scott. I appreciate it. Looking forward to talking to you as well.
So let's start with a little more background, Steve. Tell me about your journey as a trader.
Really started back in the early 1990s, maybe even the late 80s. You know, first started with the understanding of the power of compounding gains. Of course, back then, you know, we had interest on bonds and better dividends on a percentage basis. But I understood, you know, compounding, whether it be interest or capital gains, had huge, powerful effects. And when I realized this from a chart I saw in an insurance pamphlet when I was about 17 years old, and I thought, that's what I need to do, get started really early and have the time on my side to compound my capital, to have something substantial in my life and to get to financial independence as quickly as possible. And I was fortunate to be starting the stock market game in the early 90s when I started getting my capital together and growing, and had a great run in the 1990s with the trend of the tech stocks during the dot-com mania. So I started off, everybody says, how long does it take to be profitable and how long does it take me? And it's like, well, you know, it just depends. And, you know, a lot of luck early on. You know, the 90s were a great time to be buying tech stocks and trading up trends and buying dips. And it just worked out. And a lot of that was luck at the beginning.
So how would you compare some of the markets that you've been through to kind of what we're going through right now?
Yeah, I can say, you know, I've had difficult years with choppiness and different levels of volatility. But this recent one we're in right now, I don't think I've ever seen so many false momentum signals, false breakouts, reversals are almost random, and then day by day by day, you know, moves to the upside, downside, upside, downside. I mean, this is a different level. It reminds 2015 was a pretty flat, sideways year that nothing hardly worked. But in this year, it's almost like very few things work, and you can also lose a lot of money on most strategies this year. It's been a very strange, strange year, unprecedented in just false moves and the market almost hanging on every Fed governor and everything they say and having drastic moves in either direction on any day. I've never seen anything quite like this for this long.
So how are you navigating the market?
I'm just trading my system like I always have, taking them as they come. You know, a lot of the momentum signals have been false signals. Hasn't really given a lot of good dip buys. It's been a lot of cash, holding cash and just taking little jabs here and there in the market with nothing really turning into any substantial swing or trend in the past several months.
I've heard you talk about the different styles of investing that you've done over the years. How did you develop the current system that you're trading for this market?
A lot of it has been based on trial and error, learning through market conditions I experienced in real time over the last 30 years, and a lot of backtesting to see, you know, what price action led to catching swings and trends in stocks and being able to profit from it. Looking at historical risk reward ratios when you buy on a certain moving average crossover and holding it until it gets overbought, you know, or buying at oversold dip and then waiting to it to revert back to at least the mean. And a lot of it's a combination of experience, chart studies. I went through and studied all the most powerful stock charts in the history of the market to understand how they act in real time, and in backtesting, and just understanding the nature of volatility and trends and swings.
I think that's one thing that a lot of people struggle with, is really trying to decide on how they're going to trade. And so what were the steps that you took to actually back test a system and then decide, okay, this is the one that I'm going to use for this market environment, and this is a different one that I'm going to use for another market environment. How do you back test a system and then implement it into your trading?
Yeah, I start with my watch list. You know, charts and stocks I think did well, especially index ETFs are my favorite, and leverage index ETFs because they've been so historically stable. Stocks can come and go in and out of favor through the years and decades, but the indexes tend to have the same kind of a nature of trends and swings and price action and the built-in buyers in the stock market. Equities as an asset class themselves, and they function pretty stable on the ETF level. So I'll go take all the different ETFs and I'll backtest them. You know, I'll do 520 EMA crossovers, 1050 day EMA crossovers, you know, the 530, the 1030. I'll backtest them all and see how they react. You know, how do those signals do to navigate volatility? Because that's all we're really doing when we're trading is trying to profitably navigate volatility to create good risk-reward ratios. And our profit factor comes from the fact that our winners are bigger than our losers over time. And that's what I'm trying to focus in on. I mean, I'm not worried about taking a small loss a couple of times if I know eventually I'm going to catch that swing or that trend and have a substantial win, because my profits really come from my big winners, you know, not being right every single time, which is, you know, absurd. So I'm really looking at risk-reward ratios. And historically, I can see the expectancy of a signal. If I bought when a crossover happened and then I held it till a cross under happened, you know, what was the average gain and what was the average loss and what was the win percentage? And I look at the expectancy of signals and then I put them together based on different charts, different watch lists over time.
Hi there, it's Scott. I just want to take a second and thank you for listening to the Hot Wallet Podcast. If you've made it this far, you obviously like what you're listening to. So please do me a solid and leave a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. While you're at it, click follow so you're alerted to every new episode that we drop. I'm not going to keep bugging you, so let's get back to the interview with the legendary Steve Burns. So it sounds to me like you're more of a trader than an investor. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. Yeah, I started as an investor, but I lost interest in just holding things and waiting for them to go up. You know, the 90s was just a brutal education in the how bubbles can be created and how much money you could lose in a bear market if you hold through. You know, I have a lot of respect for people that are able to sit there and hold something for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years and ride an equity curve. You know, people think traders have equity curves, you know, they go up and down and we have drawdowns. I mean, I just can't imagine holding through the drawdowns that a buy and hold investor did during 2001, 2002, 2008, into 2009. I just, you know, even Warren Buffett to Charlie Munger have had 50% drawdowns multiple times just in Berkshire Hathaway stock, you know, and that's painful. And investors just have to keep believing it's going to come back to all-time highs. And that's just not, you know, not how I want to live my life or our mentality. It's just, you know, going through the cycles I've been through. In the early 2020, I mean, to hold on to that and think that everything's going to be bailed out and come back, I mean, that takes more guts than trading, I tell you that.
Yeah, a lot of sleepless nights for sure. Yeah, I remember someone showed me a chart of like Walmart, for example, and someone said, look, if you had invested in Walmart, guess what? Your money did nothing for this long period of time. But if you had traded Walmart, then you would have said, okay, my money is out of the market and now it's somewhere where it's being rewarded. And so I definitely see the benefits of trading versus investing. But that said, Steve, you know, if you are seeing a company, for example, that you like, and you can picture, I can see the success of this company, you know, name any company, Tesla, Netflix, whatever, you know, how do you separate maybe a bias from a stock chart?
Yeah, for a trader, it's really price action. And for an investor, it would be watching the fundamental trends of sales and profits and making adjustments. So I think it's two very different things, but I think even investors have to have some type of a filtering process to understand where they're just getting locked in and biased, because you can lose. Looks like a lot of people in the crypto space, the NFTs, learned how much money they could lose when they didn't have a clear exit strategy.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, speaking of your experience, it sounds like you have suffered a big drawdown in the past. That's kind of what transitioned you into a trader. Take me through the process of how you were able to reset after a drawdown, regroup, and then ultimately attain financial independence.
Yeah, 2001, I really went back to the drawing board to understand, sort of get out of too much of the investor mindset, and it was a lot like the HODL mindset of the crypto people thinking, you know, tech stocks are the way to go, dot-com mania, the internet was the future, which is correct on a fundamental standpoint. But like you said, if you would have invested in Amazon, it had, looking at back testing, it had over it was 96 or 95% drawdown from the equity peak in Amazon going through the dot-com bubble burst. I mean, people that said, oh, Amazon was a holy grail, you buy it and you hold it and you make a fortune. Like, buddy, you would have had a 96% drawdown. I mean, even if that's the right thing to do, to invest in something and hold something. I don't even know Warren Buffett and other great investors besides Bezos. Bezos held everything he had all the way down, all the way back up. But very few people could do that, or even that may not be the right thing to do. It was the wrong thing to do in almost every dot-com era stock, and looks like almost every crypto now has been the wrong thing to do. So, you know, once I learned when I had my first 50% drawdown going into 2001, 2002, where my lowest level was a 50% from my peak. And, you know, I thought I will never have another 50% drawdown again. And I took a lot of lessons into position sizing and exit strategies, stop losses, structures, you know, how much I would hold. And I took all those and I learned the lessons of why did I lose 50% of my trading capital from the peak coming out of the March 2000 high. And I took those lessons and integrated them into my system to have parameters and to make better decisions and to understand risk reward ratios. And, you know, the biggest thing I learned is I had to have an exit strategy. I had to have a way to lock in profits. And I did great, had a great run from 2003 to 2007. And I took all those lessons I learned in 2008. I started seeing all the warning signs and I was ready. And I did not have any substantial drawdown in 2008 into 2009. And I was ready, fully capitalized, ready to get back in the game in 2009. So that really was a valuable lesson, even though it hurt in 2001 and 2.
That's really powerful. How did you create your trading plan? I think that's what a lot of people struggle with. Okay, you know, there's a million ways to make money in the market. How did you, you know, kind of determine what works best for your personality and then write that down into a plan that you then follow?
Yeah, it was step by step. You know, about 21 questions went into my trading plan. You know, what signals me to get in? What signals me to buy momentum? What signals me to chase a bull market? What signals me to buy after a bear market? What signals me to get out? You know, and it was a trading plan. Really is like executing your trading system, which you know has a statistical edge based on the expectancy, into a written operational form. You know, when it's exit, it's entry signals, different types of entry signals. There could be dip buys, momentums, breakouts, volatility expansions, volatility contractions, all kinds of different entry signals. Then it's trade management. You know, where will you admit you're wrong, or, you know, where will you exit for a loss? Where's your stop loss going to be? You know, how big is the trade going to be? What's your position size based on the average true range and the volatility in the market? You know, how many positions do you have open? You know, and what's your trailing stop? If you're in a winning trade and it's moving up, how do you protect your open profits and not hold it to where you go all the way back to where you started, or even worse, go into a loss? You know, what's your profit? Do you have a profit target? Do you have a thing where you're completely happy? You know, the market gapped up after a big swing or trend of the upside, and you're just going to lock in your profits. I mean, I have tried to have every contingency plan for, so I don't have to ponder and become a philosopher during the open market hours and the end of the day. I just execute based on what I already knew I was going to do. And everything in my trading plan is in service to executing my trading system and to create a positive expectancy and to create bigger winners than losers over time. That's what it's all built upon, those principles. Nothing to do with ego or opinions or being right or predictions. You know, all that stuff is very expensive in the market to play with.
It sounds like you do a lot of work after hours when the market isn't open, and that you spend a lot of your time when the market is open just executing your plan. Can you talk about some of the work you do after hours to prepare for the day, the week, or the month?
Yeah, I go through every chart on my watch list. I have a defined watch list of stocks. It's always evolving. Things are coming in, things are coming out. I go through all of my watch lists by hand every day at least the last hour of trading. I look for patterns, trends, volatility, expansions, signals. I have all the key moving averages on charts. I have specific moving averages on each chart based on which ones backtest the best. You know, some they're all different. Some charts will trend better with a 10-50 crossover for a long-term trend. Other ones have more momentum where they have bursts where they'll have a 5-20 crossover and swing to the upside. I have on my charts 70-30 RSI parameters. So I look when a chart becomes overbought or oversold, what may be time to lock in a profit or cut a loss short. You know, I have just parameters and I go through it all by hand. And it's usually most of it happens when the market's open between 2 and 3. Now, the hundreds and hundreds of hours over the years of researching, studying charts, going through all of William O'Neill's chart books, going through page by page of every chart, studying them, I've read at this point somewhere around 400, 450 trading and investing books. At one time, I was the number one reviewer on Amazon for trading and investing books. And I was like 142 of all Amazon reviewers that were helpful about 10 years ago. At my peak, maybe more than that. So, you know, that's where I really started.
Wait. Okay. So this is crazy. You were one of the biggest reviewers on Amazon for trading books, and you've read over 400 trading books.
Yes. And I probably reviewed 1,000 books. I probably read 1,000 nonfiction books on Amazon.
That's insane. How do you go through 400 trading books and pick out some of the best parts? You know, first off, congratulations. That's amazing. And the fact that you became one of the biggest reviewers, I think, is pretty cool. What did that do for you? How did that change you as a trader? There's so much that we can pull from this.
Yeah, it really helped because I got a lot of the great trading authors contacted me. This was, years just really go by. I think I started reviewing around 2005, and by 2007 or 8, I got to be one of the top reviewers in my space and on Amazon. I got the emails from Michael Covell, Alexander Elder, become Facebook friends with like Van Tharp, Tom Basso. Really got a lot of great connections. Got to like interact with some, you know, legendary traders and trading authors. So it really helped me really get into that space in this, the people that, you know, my heroes in the, you know, that actually wrote down, quantified. Really a big fan of Michael Covell, you know, his work with actually going to the trend followers that all become millionaires and some billionaires in his trend following books. And Jack Swager had some great messaging back and forth with him on email and Facebook friend and about how he studied all the market wizards. So really, really great connections I made and learned a lot by reiterating the reviews on those books, you know, getting to actually write down what I learned.
Wow. Yeah. Share with me some of your interactions. What do you think was one of the most impactful interactions with some of these, amazing traders and authors? And what did you take away from that?
Yeah. Alexander Elder is really cool because I really learned the 3 M's from him, you know, money management, method, and the mind, and just interacting on questioning back and forth early on. Gosh, what's it been 15, 20 years ago, really getting a response, like email him like and ask him questions to get a response back on the finer details of his teachings and his technical analysis was pretty fascinating. Really to be able to interact with authors, you know, that was almost before there was even social media. It was more emails.
Yeah. And so do you still keep in touch with some of these people? And I guess what's your favorite book and do you have one?
Man, that's just the two favorites. I'd say two favorites, Trend Following by Michael Covell and The Market Wizards by Jack Swager. And really, because it's just no opinions and it's no fluff. It's the actual practitioners of trading and what they really did in real life to make money consistently for long periods of time. And it's funny, people try to accuse both of them of having survivor bias. Well, you're just picking out the winning traders. You're not picking out all the people that did that and lost money. But what they're missing is that there's common characteristics of all the trend followers and all the market wizards all have common characteristics that come back to show what it takes to be a profitable trader. And that's really what my series of books and were about, is right, really drilling down and finding the commonalities, whether you're a day trader or a trend follower. You know, and even investors have a lot of commonalities. And even the crossovers of investors and traders have a lot of the same commonalities. Warren Buffett said, you know, they accused him of survivor bias where, you know, Warren Buffett just got lucky. You know, he's just the one that it worked out for. He's in the right place, the right time, the right years. And Warren Buffett even said, well, he said, that'd be a good theory. But if you see that all the successful investors came from Grahams and Doddsville, then obviously there's something more to it. There's something in the water of value investing and those specific teachers. So, you know, Warren Buffett saying if, you know, value investing itself, you know, the skill, because there's so many people that learned under Benjamin Graham and Dodd and become so successful in value investing. So it's really fascinating, even like a risk reward ratio. You know, when Warren Buffett buys a company to acquire for Berkshire Hathaway, he's looking at the risk reward ratio. You know, what did he pay for it and what is it really worth? And he looks at the discounted cash flow into the future. Like, what can that company be worth in the future? Because he's establishing a risk reward ratio. If he's wrong, his risk is how much he paid for the stock. If he's right, he could get a, you know, 10 bagger, 20 bagger. And it's the same thing with day traders. Day traders may be risking a dollar per share trying to make $2 or $3 a share. You know, trend followers, you know, putting in a breakout. If it goes back in the range, he's stopping out. If he turns into a big trend, he could have a 5x win. Though it's fascinating how so many of the same principles, risk reward ratio, positive expectancy, trend following. It's so funny because, you know, Warren Buffett will follow the trend of positive fundamentals. You know, if it's a trend of Coca-Cola growing every single year, he will invest in it because he's following the trend of Coke expanding in sales, revenue, and profits. Yeah. So I find it fascinating that all the arguments go inside of the financial world, and it's all the same principles almost entirely at every successful venture. And you could even go take this into a lot of the business world with companies have a lot of the same exact things. Jeff Bezos loves to have a risk of $1 million in Amazon on a business that he might can make $100 million out of if it's successful.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, there's so many ways to make money in the market. It's almost the problem is deciding on what to do, right?
Yeah. And having the psychology to execute it properly for long periods of time. That's the psychology and the risk management aspects are just amazing and complex. And new traders and investors just have no idea the psychology involved in executing something profitable for a decade.
Steve, you mentioned some of your books. Was I right in saying that it's more than 20 books that you've written with your wife, Holly?
It's something. It's around 25-ish. And I had five, I had four or five or six with a publisher, a small publisher before we started writing our books. So I think it's around 25.
Wow. Take me through the process of what, you know, what sparked your interest to become an author. Obviously, you've read a lot of books, so I can see the connection there. But what gave you the idea to put your own kind of process down on paper and then share that with everyone?
It's almost like, you know, what else do you do once you're, you know, financially independent and you're doing good? It's like, what are you going to do? Watch TV and go to the movies and eat. I mean, I don't know what you do. So it's like I try to have a structure in my life where I'm doing something constructive and productive every day. And I love reading books and learning new things. And it just was a natural evolution after reading so many to like having a desire and inspiration to put that down in paper, put it on paper myself and to break it down. It was just a natural evolution to get it out. It's very therapeutic. I tell you, some of my best trading has come after I've written one of my books, whether, you know, New Trader, Rich Trader, or options trading book. You know, generally, after I read one, I do better at trading for whatever reason. It's like really, because I have to, it's like quantifying and getting it out on paper. It's really, it's an amazing process of education when you have to write it all down. That's one of the reasons I was writing so many book reviews was just getting it down and, you know, getting my thoughts together and capturing those lessons. Like you said, it's just very hard to capture so many lessons, so many books. You have to have it written down at some point. So the expansion into the writing was really just a natural progress of reading so much. And, you know, in my blog, I really enjoy the format of blogging as well. It's like expressing yourself and getting it out there. So I've enjoyed the process.
Yeah, your book, New Trader, Rich Trader, is an absolute classic. It's almost like a conversation between this bold new trader who's all fired up, raring to go, and then this rich trader who is more calm and collected. What are some of the biggest mistakes that new traders make, and how can they make the leap to then become a rich trader?
Yeah, there's the biggest thing is so odd in the trading world. People just do not take it seriously or professionally. It's like nobody goes up to a doctor and say, how can I make some quick money practicing medicine? Or, you know, hey, man, I heard you make a lot of money being a lawyer. You know, can you tell me real quick how to be a lawyer? Tell me the secrets. You know, it's like it is a long.
Yeah, I've seen Judge Judy. I know how this works.
Yeah. it's a strange because there's such a low barrier to entry to become a trader. You just get a brokerage account, get a little capital together, and then you can be a trader. You know, you can't go, you know, challenge an NBA player to a basketball game. You can't say, hey, I'm going to be in the NBA and then buy a uniform and run out on the court and start playing against NBA players. But you can do that in trading. It's one of the lowest barrier to entry things that you can do professionally, except for maybe start a business if you had enough money. But even that takes more capital to start some type of business. That's what the first thing is, not respecting the seriousness, and you're going against professionals that are trying to take your money and on the other side of your trade. It's really odd. It's like a gambling mindset where people think that trading is like gambling. It's random and you're scratching like a lottery ticket or you're going to a casino, which they do create the casino experience because the casino has a mathematical positive expectancy over them and they're trading with the odds against them. And that's exactly what almost every new trader does with no understanding of the positive expectancy of what they're doing or whether there's any parameters. A trade outside of a positive expectancy trading system has no meaning. It's random, which is exactly mm-hmm. what gambling is. So I think that's the biggest first step is they don't take it seriously or professionally and really have no idea. And then they launch into putting money at risk without any understanding what they're doing. Then you go into like, you know, the emotions flood them like the book talks about. And then the risk, no risk management or new traders risking all the capital they have on every trade every time until they blow up.
Have you ever mentored someone that has blown up and trying to help them kind of pick themselves up and get back to the proper process?
Yeah, usually I get emails daily, but it's always after someone has blown up. And generally all the new traders that, you know, I do get approached by, they have done, they get enough capital together. Some of them have meaningful little amounts of capital, and then they immediately launch into it and they quickly lose it. A lot of them go into, you know, futures or crypto or options and lose it all. And they come back, you know, it hurts my stomach, you know, when they tell me, hey, I just lost $5,000 trading. You know, and then they start. It's like, man, you get to educate yourself first, then you go trade. You don't start putting money at risk then after you lose it all. Then you come figuring it out, because then you got like the risk of mental ruin where you're almost have PTSD from losing so much money so fast, because, you know, capital is very meaningful to people, especially when you get into the thousands of dollars. And the other thing is just undercapitalized where, you know, they don't even have enough to day trade properly with the pattern day trading rule, much less any kind of real trading. They don't have any understanding that like in any business, for any kind of serious trading, you need at least $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. You're doing something serious and meaningful. I mean, you can play around with day trading for $25,000, $30,000, but that's just really not properly capitalized for proper position sizing and risk and be able to go through drawdowns. It's very fascinating to see people's journeys. There's so many reasons why, like over 90% of traders, they say 90% of traders fail. You know, 90% of traders, you know, they don't fail. They blow up very quickly. And the ones that stick around don't make money. It's probably 95-96% stick around and they give back all their profits because they trade too big. It's just a fascinating journey. And I so many people contact me and I feel sorry for them. But anybody listening to this that's thinking about trading, I mean, you start with a profitable trading system. That's what you start with, not after the fact.
Yeah, I mean, that leads me into my next question is, what advice would you give to someone who is starting at zero, which is where I think we all start as active investors, you know, just try and build up an account that, you know, to your point is meaningful, and then to get into trading?
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing is to match with their personal finance first. If you have credit card bills or you have a huge car payment or you're struggling with your personal finances, you need to start with personal finances. You don't need to be trading. You probably need Dave Ramsey or Robert Kiyosaki. You'll start there. Once you get your personal finances in order and you start saving money and having some trading capital, then the education begins. I mean, you need to find five really good books that fit whatever your method is or belief system. You know, if you want to be a day trader, you know, go study the best five day trading books. If you want to be a investor, go study five of the best investing books. You'll start with educating yourself. And the best, cheapest education is with books, and libraries are free. And Kindle Unlimited, you can probably get a lot of good ones there. But the information on the internet, you know, find sources you trust that are free, even with YouTube and blogs. And you can get all the basics for free. You know, when you want to start saving time and effort, then you can go buy yourself an expensive $50 trading book or an e-course of some nature. There's a lot of really cheap ones on Udemy, but you got to find it's from the right source. But But that's the, you know, education. Now, these are the steps. And most people skip all those steps. A lot of people say, how can I make some quick money? You know, I'm broke. I need to make some quick money. It's like, well, this ain't the place to do it. It's like, that's not, you know, you're not going to go make some quick money going and playing against some professionals in any field. Why they think trading would be any different than that is beyond me.
The fuel that takes a new trader from dreaming of success to being successful is desire, passion, faith, resources, and knowledge. If one of these elements are missing, a new trader may not survive long enough to attain their goals. That line is from New Trader, Rich Trader, Volume 2. Steve, can you dive into these five things with me and expand on their importance? You kind of already did, but I'd like to go deeper with you.
Yeah, it's got to be a passion. You're not gonna create enough energy to get through the learning curve of trading unless you have that passion. You know, and passion is not going to make you money. You need the knowledge of understanding how to trade and having a positive expectancy model to trade with. You have to have every element of the things you need to be successful. It's a very serious. It's the same thing being any business. Like if you want to go be a successful restaurateur, you know, you need to be passionate about food. You need to know how to cook food. You need to know where to put the restaurant. You need to know who your target customers are, who you're selling to, what your profit margin is, how many customers you have every night, you know, how much they spend on average. I mean, it's just nothing different. You need all of those elements that I mentioned in that to get through it, because it's a very, very treacherous learning curve. And the barrier to entry is very low, but the barrier to be profitable is very high. I had a friend one time, a kid, who's saying that he wanted to go to law school. And he was really excited about going to law school. And I said, you think you can do that? He said, you think you can be successful? He said, yeah, I think I can get into law school. And I think I can graduate. And I said, no, I'm not talking about getting into law school and graduating. I'm talking about getting out of law school and practicing law. And go be and start being an intern when you're in college, or if some of them become paralegals to get their foot in the door, or then other ones, you know, go become try to work to be a partner, get in as a new associate and work 100 hours a week to try to make partner in a law firm. You know, those are very different things than just going to law school. You know, that's what people do not count the cost before they do anything. And I think those elements show that's what you need to pay the cost that you're going to need to get to the learning curve. You know, even after you're successful, you know, there's still ups and downs in any career or any business, and the trading is the same thing. So you need each one of those specific elements to even do it. If you're missing one, the odds of you making it are very, very, very low.
Let's talk about resources a bit, Steve, because I think a lot of people will go on Instagram or TikTok and say, oh, look, this guy and I saw this thing yesterday where he's like, I just made $5,000 trading options. And I put $5,000 into SPY puts, and then I made $5,000. And follow me, it's that easy. And I was just like, okay, so you risked $5,000. You know, where was your stop? How did you manage this? You know, and so resources, I feel, are so plentiful right now. What are some resources that you consider important for your style of trading?
Yeah, the best resource I have is what the market's telling me in my trade management signals and watching the chart in real time. To go back to what you said about that guy, so funny, people are like, how can I make 10% a month? Or how can I make $1 million? Like the mathematical absurdity of that is so shocking that immediately if you see a luxury car, a real luxury car, someone showing you that it's rented, or their subscribers, or their paid subscribers are paying for it. Nobody that's rich shows off a car. Nobody. I can't even conceive of how stupid. I mean, just from a dangerous standpoint for letting someone know you have cash, show people showing cash. I mean, that should be a warning sign to get as far away from that as possible to see anything like that. And the compounding amount of like 10%, you know, Bernie Madoff took over the world with a money management, getting all the money he could stand by returning a little bit over 1% a month. 1% a month was the most unbelievable compounding greatest return that anyone could conceive of. He was able to raise endless capital in the real world. 1% a month does it consistently, because most real managers have drawdowns 15, 20, 30%. And the so erratic with their returns, you know, having good bull market years, having bad bear market years, that's all it takes. And if anybody can return or make 5,000 on the blink of an eye, they could compound that to being a billionaire within a year. There's, if you could really make that kind of money consistently and have a high win rate and put the money back in, you know, mathematically, that's how Warren Buffett and George Soros and Paul Tudor Jones become billionaires, was compounding year over year over year over year their capital. So if that kid can really do that, then he should be a billionaire within at least a few years, especially what he's claiming. I mean, you could scale something like that in SPY options very easily. You'd be a millionaire very quickly.
I'll have to follow him on Instagram and see if he does become a billionaire. We'll see.
Yeah. it's like a gambling kid that somebody won the lottery. It says, I want to teach you how to win the lottery.
Definitely. So when you attained financial independence, you didn't go out and buy a Lambo then?
No, that's the best path, like the Millionaire Next Door series. You know, the best path to financial independence is frugality, is making high income and frugality and compounding capital. And the moment that you have enough money to pay your bills easily every month, you're financially independent. Then you can go scale to whatever you want to be in your trading or your investing or your business or whatever pathway you take. Everybody I know, I know some market wizards, even secondarily know some people worth, you know, hundreds of millions, and they're all dressed plainly. And it's, you know, a lot of them live in very, very nice houses, but they look the opposite of what the get rich quick gurus look like, oddly enough. You know, there's a bunch of millionaire traders I know that have minivans. You know, it's just, I can't tell you any millionaire, multimillionaire, you know, or rich person that I know that's very extravagant about anything, except for maybe their home. They live in a very nice home, very nice neighborhood. You know, even Warren Buffett has the same home he's had since the 1950s. And his biggest luxury is he bought NetJets so he could ride in his private jets. You know, and they have to make Warren. That's another funny story. They make Warren Buffett, his daughter will make him buy a new car every 7 or 8 years because she starts saying, this is ridiculous, Warren. You have the same car for 8 years, 8-year-old car. And he's like, it's nice. It's a Cadillac. You know, I don't need it. You know, what's the big deal? Who cares? You know, they have to talk Warren Buffett, who was the richest man in the world, many times into buying a new car because he doesn't care. Like, I'm the same way. I could care less. I just, you know, what I value is independence, freedom, doing what I want to do, living my life the way I want to live it, autonomy. You know, that's what I value. And that's what I focus on. I could care less about, very many materialistic things. I mean, I just don't even understand it.
So as someone who has already attained financial independence, how do you then, as an active investor, set goals? You know, what's your process for daily, monthly, and yearly goals?
Yeah, well, so much is out of my control. I mean, I just execute my system, and I want to always see my capital growing, you know, month over month, if possible. A lot of times that doesn't happen. I want to see my capital grow, you know, every 3 months, 6 months, but I don't really have a lot of control over it. If the market makes me go flat and it's choppy and I don't get any really good trends, I can't have a really great year if I do not have great swings and trends. I mean, that's my methodology. No matter what your signals are, whether you're a day trader or a value investor, you know, you have whatever your positive expectancy model is and your system is, you have to have the market has to be in confluence with what your systems and signals are. You know, Warren Buffett is going to lose money in a bear market year. You know, it doesn't matter. He's a value investor. All his stocks he held went down. However, his system is he has a lot of cash on hand. People don't know that Warren Buffett will go in and buy during deep bear markets, that he's not a buy and hold because he doesn't always put all of his money in the stocks. He lets the cash flow from Berkshire Hathaway insurance division build up, so he has a lot of cash, and he'll go in and buy the dips during bear markets and when stocks get in trouble that he wants to own. Same thing with me. I try to have a diversified system. You know, I try to make money on momentum crossover signals. I'll buy a deep dip. You know, I try to have a diversification of signals. So if the market plunges and then reverses and swings to the upside, I'll make money. If it breaks out in trends, I'll make money. You know, if it's a confluence to my signals, I'll make money. If it's just a tight, choppy market, you know, I don't drop down and start day trading. That's just not my thing. So I have months where I do not make money. That's just part of the game. But, you know, with my blog and business and books, you know, I try to always, in my social media, I'm trying to always be a little better than I was the previous day, every single day with everything I do, trading and all my educational resources. Every day I try to make it a little bit better.
Steve, I'd love to wrap up with a few kind of current topics here. You know, would love to get your thoughts on Bitcoin and crypto. How do you view this market and the potential technology and the potential trading opportunity? Maybe not now, but down the road.
Yeah, I do not trade crypto due to the extreme volatility and dangers of the unregulated market. I did find some good back tests for 5-10 crossovers for crypto on a watch list, and I did trend for a while, but the wild volatility and chop and swings and danger, even with the brokers themselves, have led me away from crypto. I do believe crypto is the ones that have that are built on something like the sandbox that has a metaverse, you know, Bitcoin that has a huge following, Ethereum that has its own blockchain. In the long term, some of them will survive and actually be valuable and be trading instruments. I think right now we're just such in an early speculative cycle. What are there 10,000 crypto coins? The odds are 99% of those will no longer exist in the next few years. So just too wild of a market for me. I don't know which one's going to survive and win yet long term. So I just avoid the market itself.
Yeah, definitely looking for more regulatory clarity to bring kind of that, you know, potential for traditional investors into the space. What do you think about artificial intelligence? You know, I've seen you tweet about AI and ChatGPT a few times here and there. How do you think it will affect markets and trading? And will it really put everyone out of work?
Yeah, ChatGPT has got to be the greatest technology I've seen next to the internet and the iPhone. I mean, it is mind-blowing the power of it aggregating the internet for quick answers. It's almost like having an employee or a coder, you know, or a somebody working for you or a knowledge expert. You can say, act as a nutrition expert and give me a diet plan. I mean, it's incredible. The weakness of it is that it's not real time. It gives you wrong answers. And what you get is only the quality of your prompts, what you tell it to do. But I'm just stunned at the power of ChatGPT. It's just incredible. It's a really powerful like research tool to find things or things that are more evergreen lessons. You know, if you want to learn something, it's a very powerful platform. So I do think AI, I think that we've moved from the crypto world into the metaverse world for a while. I think AI is a new hot technology. You can really see the ticker symbol AI, how wild that's been trading to show the AI bull market's already arrived in the stock market.
How have you used ChatGPT personally? Do you use it to help you write articles? What kind of questions have you asked it?
I ask it if I want to research something, if I want to know, you know, tell me, you know, the S&P 500 over the last 5 years, you know, it's very quick. It's very fascinating. It can be used if you just want some quick, specific information by 2021 and above, you know, and I'll ask it questions to if I want a quicker response than Google search, because it gives you a specific, you don't have to go to Google search it and then look at all the blog posts and figure out which one you want to go to or find information. I think it's a really good tool for information. If you want to know something factual and specific, like around 2021 and back.
Yeah, very cool. I think there's definitely going to be some interesting things that come out of this. You know, we saw someone from Citadel say that they're looking into using AI and tools like ChatGPT. So I think it's an exciting time to be interested in technology to see how it all plays out.
I think it's going to replace a lot of jobs.
Yeah, definitely. Talk to me, Steve, about how you use social media. You know, you are great at posting information on Twitter. You're very active on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and you've really developed a knack for creating and posting engaging trading content. And that is a real skill, man. Talk to me about your process, about how you use it not only as, you know, a tool as a trader, but also a tool as someone who is sharing information.
Yeah, it's sort of like my train of consciousness, you know, and I learned a lot. That's what people don't understand. Like, I learn a lot from the questions I ask people. Say, why do you ask so many questions? Because I learn a lot from the questions. It really helps with my cognitive biases. You know, if I ask and see, you know, what percentage of people are bearish or bullish and what people think about different technologies and what people think about a chart or people's opinions about things, it's incredible what you can learn from the replies. So I enjoy the learning aspect of that. It's also like, it's like getting stuff out of me. Like, I have something I want to share, like just to get it out into the world and write it down. It's very therapeutic and really helps me clarify my thoughts and, you know, put it up for public scrutiny. You learn a lot when you put your thoughts and opinions into public scrutiny. It's an educational tool and a stream of consciousness for me.
As a Twitter power user, is it better or worse after Elon?
It's different. It's interesting. So many more people are back that were banned, and it seemed like it's a more open communicative environment now than it was previously. But Yeah, I would say it's more open and more serious conversation now than it used to be because of his stand on freedom of speech, no matter what. So, yeah, I have enjoyed the new features and longer format tweets and the different things he did.
Well, Steve, I thank you so much for your time today, my friend. It's great to finally connect, and I hope that we can do this again soon.
All right, sounds good, Scott. Hope you have a great day.
Awesome, brother. We did it. We got through it. Thank you.
From the bottom, ain't no half-stepping. I'm the dog, I made it through so they don't ask questions. Long Beach, and it ain't no half-repping. Once a dog, always a dog, so they don't ask questions.
Looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C, as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundel from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.